Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Tom Wynn back on the show. Tom's a very popular guy in the walleye industry these days. He is launching Tom Wynn University just a few days ago, and also just a few weeks ago, he won the NWT Championship out on Lake Huron. Now, this particular interview took place here a week or so ago. A little bit of technical difficulty didn't allow me to get it launched right away. But that being said, it's a very fun and interesting conversation about the NWT Championship and just kind of getting the full recap on that and all the fishy details there. And then we talk about launching THU, Tom Wynn University. And that just happened here. That just took place a couple of days ago, of course. And like I said, this interview was just a few days before that. So just some great details on all the things going on in Tom Wynn's world. And he is just an interesting guy that is doing great things. So we're talking fishing, we're talking NWT Championship, and we're talking Tom Wynn University. Let's get to it. For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their eye candy kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the eye candy kit. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Things got a little bit crazy at the championship, so I want to hear about that first, man. Tell me about the championship out on Lake Huron.
Yeah, I mean, so the championship, the NWT championship, a little over a week ago now, but yeah, we, you know, had a off-limits practice. You know, none of us could pre-fish till a certain amount of days beforehand, and so that was a added challenge, which I like. And I like that off limits deal, but it really makes you, you know, it's nerve wracking. And out there, you know, Lake Huron is obviously massive. And like the area that is known that this time of year for having big fish, it's that Thunder Bay or Alpena area. And, you know, looking at a map of Thunder Bay, you're like, oh yeah, I can break that down, no problem. But then when you're there, you're like, what, you know? And so then one night over there, I was kind of breaking it down on Google Maps, looking at how big it is. And if I did my measurements right, it's bigger, just Thunder Bay alone is bigger than the whole entire Otter Tail Lake in Minnesota. And that's where our championship was a few years ago with 40 boats. So right. Just Thunder Bay itself was bigger than that. And we could fish the entirety of Lake Huron on the U.S. side. So a lot of water. And so also, you know, just I wasn't on anything consistent out there at all. This year I decided to team up with Chase Parsons, Tommy Kimos, and Corey Springle. And the reasoning for that is, you know, I've been asked to team up in the past few years with guys, and I, you know, it's super humbling that anybody would ask me, being fairly new to the circuit. But my whole grasp on it was like, I don't necessarily want to team up with somebody who fishes like me. I want to team up with somebody who can learn from me and I can learn from them. Because that, those guys are wealth of knowledge as far as how certain systems of water work, how the Great Lakes work, how rivers work. Just, you know, the traditional things that we used to have to break down in order to catch these fish, these guys understand it. And it showed this year. Like at the beginning of the year, I said, you know, if you can combine, like some of the people who are against forward facing sonar, for example, I tell them, if you can combine what you know as an average traditional angler with what I know with electronics, it's going to be scary. And it's what we were able to do this year. Like I was able to listen and just absorb everything they were talking about and be like, okay, then this narrows this out for me. I used to just go fishing. I used to not pay attention much to water temp. I used to not pay attention to current. And now it's like knowing these things, it helps me to eliminate water faster for myself and for them. And like, you know, Chase, he found a really good bite one day, like a 25 to 28 pound a day bite, which was what everybody thought we'd need to make the top 10. Mm-hmm. And then the very next day it was gone. It was done because the water temp had dropped 9 or 10 degrees. So that was proof right there to me. Like, okay, the area around Thunder Bay with those winds we were having, it's just too much fluctuation day to day, hour to hour on that water temp. And that's a real thing. So I caught some fish up in that area. But then one day of practice, I went down to down south, way south, Saginaw Bay area. And I saw the water color was a little bit stained down there, which I like. It wasn't near as crystal clear as up north. And there's way more fish. Now, the fish down there, they weren't big, 18 to 21 inches, 22 inches sometimes. But I noticed that I could get the same poundage. I was getting the same weight, which in practice I was happy with, you know, 15 to 18 pounds consistently, I guess. 18 was on the higher end of that. In practice, all those days, I only caught 2 fish in the 4 pound range, nothing bigger. And so I was nervous because everybody's talking, oh, we're going to need 20 to 25 pounds. Actually, it's 25 to 30 pounds just to get into the cut. But then I have to start thinking, like, you know, it's hard for me, but I have to kind of like, this is the first tournament where I'm like, you know what, Tom, you're pretty good at this. So you have to trust that if you're only finding this size fish consistently, everybody else is probably, you know, also struggling to find that 20 to 25, 30 pound bag.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to back up now and be like, you know, maybe it's just, you know, I was on the right thing. So like the day before the tournament, in the tournament rules meeting, I got pulled aside to be interviewed for the NWT TV deal. And I almost scripted it out for myself without even knowing it. Like I just said, honestly, everybody's talking about these 20 to 30 pound bags. I said, I'm not seeing it, but I'm going to go to an area where I don't think anybody's fishing within miles and miles of me. And the fish, and I'm going to shoot for 16 to 18 pounds a day is what I said. And day one, weirdly, I came in with 16 pounds even. Day two, I come in with 18-14 or 18-15, something like that. So I was right there at that 17 some pound average, and then it put me right inside the top 10. Just like, you know, I said, that's what I needed to do.
Yeah.
To first shot at Angler of the Year. And at the time I wasn't even thinking about winning the championship. I was just like, you know, trying to put myself at least in a position for AOI. So, but also on in practice, the one of the last days of practice, I fished up north over some really deep stuff. Ended up where that's where a lot of the field fished. And when I'm talking deep, I'm talking 60 to 120 feet of water. People were fishing over to these suspended walleyes that were cruising. And typically that's my style. Like, I know how to set my electronics and everything so that I can study these fish, see which one's the bigger ones and stuff. But there was fish of all sizes cruising that, and they were moving fast. And I'm like, you know, it's just a little bit within the, with the water, the warm water moving all the time. So it was crazy. Like, I was under the assumption before, like, the shoreline water is always going to be warmer than going out deep. It's not. Like, that shoreline water was like in the 50 some degrees, whereas you can go a mile out and it was, you know, 68. It was just nuts. Man. So, yeah, I know. So, but it kept shifting. It kept moving with all those winds and stuff we were having. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let anybody who wants to fish this, I'm going to let them battle it out here. I'm going to go where things are consistent. And also, in that day, I spent a few hours up there in the, over that deep stuff. I was chasing some of these fish. You know, I was just chasing, trying to get a bait in front. And then one thing I noticed that just caught my attention toward the end there is, like, every single one of these fish I'm having to chase, and they're all going south. So I'm like, So in my area is 80 miles south. The area I was fishing was about 75 to 80 miles south of that deep spot area up by Thunder Bay. And so I'm like, you know, and in my head, I was thinking it's like a fairy tale. I'm like, you know, maybe by tournament day, these fish will be, you know, funneling down there. And so, you know, they're going like 1 to 2 miles an hour, these fish were. So I'm like, it'd be like a perfect scenario, but it probably won't happen. You know, we're always in the tournaments, we're always 1 week too early, 1 week too late. You know how we talk about all the time. Mm-hmm. We always complain about that. But I went down there on day one, that 16 pounds, sorted through a lot of fish with my electronics. And it's harder to sort through when you're trying to pick between 18 and a 21 incher on your electronics. I just thought, with looking at hundreds and hundreds of fish a day, I thought I could see, would be able to find one big one at least, but I just couldn't in practice or that day one. And then, so it came with 16 pounds, then day two and went out and single digit poundage until about half the day rolled around. And then I started noticing more bait balls coming in, and it's smelt as the primary forage there. And then I started seeing bigger marks, and I caught a 4 pounder, and I'm like, whoa, okay. And then I said to my co-angler about two or three times that day, cause I was excited. I told him, I think we're witnessing something right now. I think we're seeing the migration heading this way to that warmer, more consistent water. And so ended up within the last half of the day there, ended up from single digit weights up into just shy 19 pounds. And then, you know, went back to weigh in, talked to some of the guys. I know, like, you know, Hoyer came up to me and congratulated me on making the cut and everything, and some of the other guys did too. But I just told everybody just how I am. Like, I'll tell everybody whatever, and I'm like, I tell them, I'm like, I think I'm witnessing something down there as far as bigger fish starting to just pushing in today. And I said, if that's the case, tomorrow could be special. And next day rolled around and rolled down there, and I stopped short of saying it was easy, but there was a lot of big fish. Like, it was weird. It was just like, exactly how it was played out in my mind. And just panning around, there's way more big fish to toss at, way more fish to look at and try to catch them. And, you know, only caught, still again, only a fraction of what I saw. I mean, not all of them bite, but throwing that Northland black tungsten jig, I used 3/8 because of the wind. I mean, we had some crazy winds. And I was nervous day three morning. I was like, oh, please, they're not going to let us out. And if that's the case, at NWT, they don't ever get a permit to go an extra day. So I would, if they would have called it because of a small craft advisory, I would have finished 8th place in that tournament. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the wind was howling, it was going, and they called they said there's going to be a small craft at 2. And so I was like, all right, so that means they're going to launch us. And thank goodness they did. Took it easy getting down there, had some boat issues. I shouldn't even say boat issues, just weird issues in the boat that morning to overcome. Like my foot instantly, right away, my trolling motor foot pedal was being a little squeamish. It was being like, it was real soft, like easy to turn. And like I would turn it to the left, for example, and it would lag as it was going to the head was lagging as it would go left. And when I get part way left, it would like fling real hard to the left, same to the right. And I'm like, oh no, what is going on? That's my lifeline, you know? And so I'm like, please just, and I caught 2 fish with it being like that. So I'm thinking, okay, I can make it work. And my first 2 fish were like a 4 and a 3 pounder. And I'm like, I can make this work. Let's just pray that it goes all day. Within 10 minutes of catching that second fish, my trolling motor head just went crazy. Like the pedal, just something happened in there, shorted out or something. And which is odd because the day before, 0 issues, nothing, no hint of something going wrong. So it was just odd that it started right away that morning. But I hollered at my co-angler, and it's windy. The boat's getting, you know, like those. And it was like washing machine type waves there. It was like waves on top of waves. It was like churning. It was like not just one steady flow of waves going one direction. And so, and everybody knows my deal with being seasick too. But thank goodness I took my medication for that in the morning. But I hollered at him. I'm like, hey, get in that compartment back there. Can you take out that Garmin box and unpack it for me? And he opens the compartment and he kind of looks at me. And I'm like, yep, unpack that. And he was like, I think he was surprised I carried a brand new foot pedal with me.
Oh, man.
In the boat.
Yeah, smart. Yeah.
Then I'm thinking, like, please let it be the pedal, not the motor. And so I did I got the screwdriver on, and, you know, took the original pedal out and installed, put that one in, paired it up, calibrated it, all that, and it worked, thankfully.
Oh my.
I know. And so, but that was some time down. And then, so I was following my bait, my jig and crawler up, like if a fish wouldn't eat it, but that fish was big enough, I'd follow it up with a reaction bait. And I hollered at my co-angler one time. Usually I have it right by my feet, but for some reason I think I was just so caught up with installing that motor and stuff. Whenever I was doing that, I put the rods in the back and just forgot to put them up there back by me. So I told him, hey, can you hand me that rod? And so he's like, he hands it to me, and I hadn't thrown it all day yet, but he hands it to me, and my rod handle, the real handle, is on the other side. And I'm like, really confused and whatever. I could switch it, but I was also on a fish in the wind trying to stay on that fish. And, you know, I'm all about like keeping my eyes on that screen. Mm-hmm. Because once you take your eyes off, even for a second or two, sometimes that fish disappears somehow, you know? So I was confused. I was like changing my reel handle over, and when I say hollered back at him, I have to holler because of the wind. So I holler back at him. I'm like, hey, did you change this for some reason? He's like, no. And because we reel with the same hand, like, and we're like, I reel with my right hand with a spinning reel. That's odd for most people apparently, but So him and I reel with the same hand, so he wouldn't switch it. So in my head, I'm like confused, like, what? Like, how did this get switched? And then going to, you know, set the hook on a couple fish, all my drag was super tight. Usually when I'm about at 75% swing on a hook set, my drag's coming out. And when I set the hook on one of these 6-pounders that day, no drag. I'm like, oh no. And so I loosened it. We put that fish in the live well, and then I start fishing again. But then I said to him, I'm like, hey, can you check the drag on these other reels? And he pulls them, no drag. He goes, they're all tight. I'm like, what? So it's like, then I start in my head, I start, you know, my mind starts messing with me. I'm like, did somebody get in my boat? Like,
somebody's messing with you.
Did somebody? And so I started freaking myself out. I'm like, why or who or what? Did somebody get into my boat? On the only thing that could have happened was on day two at the weigh-in. And I was one of the last ones to leave that day too. And, you know, but I don't know. Like, it was just odd stuff. And
that would be a classic. That would be a classic prank to pull. Like, if you were going into like some, you know, just Tuesday night derby, you know, you could do that to your buddy, switch a couple reel handles and tighten up some drags. But man, that almost sounds
not on the championship.
That doesn't sound very cool.
No. And so, then we, you know, the wind is getting worse that day. The air is getting colder. It just seemed like it was gonna, you know, it was gonna be really treacherous potentially to get in, and I had like 40 miles to run in. And so around noon I said, okay, we need to start thinking about possibly going in already, and it's 3 hours early. And because I had one dead fish in the live well and the other ones being, you know, like jostled. So the Vexus boats have this anti-slosh feature in their live wells, which I utilized on and off through the day. And the main reason you want to use it is on runs. So when you're going through big waves, those fish aren't being sloshed around. But when you're just fishing and you're still got hours to fish, you don't want to use that feature because the water can warm up too fast, because it's just constantly putting water in and that pump is heating up the water, but it keeps the water to the very tip top of the live well. So there's no sloshing. So while we were fishing in those waves, it was just, you know, jostling the boat around a little bit. And so it was kind of tossing around in there a little bit. So I didn't want to risk any more fish potentially dying. I don't even know how that one fish died. I mean, it just died. but like we, you know, I think I'm going to go in a little bit early. And, so we started heading in around just shy of 1 o'clock, I believe. And, start heading in, and about halfway back, about, you know, 20 miles or so, 17 to 20 miles into the run, you know, I've never done this before in a run back, stop and check my live well, but just pounding through these waves, and it's almost like something told me, Tom, stop to check your live well. And so I stopped. Collier looked at me like, oh, what else is going on today? And opened my live well, and I'm just about got sick. Like, open the live well, all the fish are laying on the floor of the live well, no water.
What?
And I'm like, yes, all those fish. I'm like, oh no. And I just stared at them for a little bit. I'm like, dude, they're not moving. I was like, they're all freaking dead.
So and if they're all dead, I mean, you know, just talk about that penalty. Yeah, you're looking at a 2.5-pound decrease on your bag. Oh, man.
That's huge. So looking at that, and then just so I ran up to the front of my boat, one of my front compartments. I carry like a 2.5-gallon bucket. And got that bucket and started bailing water into it. My live well, when I stopped, you know, the water started pumping back in there and stuff like that. So, I filled it all the way to the top. The fish still are like, you know, didn't look like they were breathing. I dumped all the G juice that I had left into it and just put the intensive care feature on the Vexus, which is nice that they have that, turn that intensive care feature on the live well. And sickeningly, literally drove back the half, last half the way, and was just praying the whole time, like, please, that I just, you know,
just let one of them come back. Let two of them come back. I mean, this, it all matters because you're, I mean, you're, it's day three of the championship. You went out in eighth place, but you had to have known. I mean, obviously you knew.
I knew it at 10:30.
You had what was up until then the biggest, you know, you didn't know what the other nine anglers on day three had for that particular weigh-in, but you knew you had the biggest bag of the tournament so far, and it was big enough that, you know, I mean, you had to be thinking thoughts at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And I thought too, like, you know, whenever I hit that 24 pound mark that day and I turned around after that fish won the live one, I turned around and started fishing again. Like, just start thinking about that. I got 24 pounds today. I'm like, this is going to really put the pressure on the leaders. And I actually started getting emotional out there. Like, I was like, did I really just do this? Like, did this really, is this happening? And this, and that, now I'm just thinking about like, did I just win this championship? And then angler of the year, I'm still thinking, okay, that is a far-fetched deal because I'm 8 points behind Hunter. And I'm like, he's in the top 10 as well. Also, Dylan's up there, Nussbaum. He was 1 point ahead of me going in. And I'm like, in order for me to do that, and I said it the day, night before too, in another interview, I said, I have to win this thing and Hunter has to get ninth.
Right.
And I'm like, that's, you know, these guys are just on a roll right now. Just amazing anglers using forward facing. So I'm like, you know, I just didn't think that was going to be a deal. Knowing that I could have just lost that for myself because I didn't check that. And what happened with that live well is the little lever that goes, you know, you turn it to the right to close the drain.
Yep.
That is, it's my own fault for not checking that. It was all the way, it was to the right, but not all the way to the right. So it's my own fault for not checking it. So we get back to not too many people know this, but we got back to the docks. We go through the breakwater there at about 45 minutes early in a call tournament. So we got 45 minutes early. I called the tournament director. I said, hey, can you send your guy down to do a courtesy check? And they do that. If you come in early, they check your dead or alive fish so that, you know, you don't have to risk sitting there for 40 minutes and something else dying. So they sent the guy down. Oh my goodness. I was like, just cringing.
Yeah. You didn't know what was going to happen when you reopened that live well.
I didn't even open the live well lid. I was like, I just let him do it. Cause I'm like, I don't want to see. And he opens it. And they're up at the top there. He looked at, cause I told him, I'm like, one in there is stiff as a board. He found that one right away, but the other ones were just laying there. They were breathing. I was like, are you kidding?
Gills are moving. Yeah. And I mean, all it is, I imagine is, you know, the gills are moving just like any signs of life are they pretty hard on that rule? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they're breathing. Yeah. They were straight up like breathing. Like I was like,
oh, no kidding.
Crazy. And so, I had to sit at the tank, you know, I sat at the tanks for 40 minutes or whatever, waiting for everybody to get in, but stressful waiting. But you know, I knew that, you know, sitting in eighth place and I was 3 pounds down from the leaders.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this is, it's still a long shot. If Kent Anderson comes in with the consistent bag, it's going to be real close. If Evan Rosemore, it's the Rosemores that are, you know, like, those guys are extremely consistent.
Yeah.
And they did have a really consistent 3 days, 18 and 19, 18 pounds or something like that. And as the guys were walking up to the tanks, you know, you can get kind of like a peek inside their bags as they're walking up.
Yeah.
The only ones I didn't get a peek at was, Evan and his dad, Stevens, bag. And so I'm like, I had no idea. And I was standing right next to Hunter at the tanks, and he's like, and the guys I was standing around, they're like, you might have this. And then Hunter said, dude, you might have both of these. And I'm like, no, there's no way. And I was like, there's no way. And he looked really concerned. And I started thinking about looking, and I'm like, I still don't think so. Like, like he, you know, but when it all came, when it was all said and done, it was what I said I needed to do. I needed to win. He needed to get ninth. And that's exactly what happened for a tie. And then, you know, he ended up winning the tiebreaker.
Yeah. And explain what the tiebreaker was.
So right away on the stage, so it was me, Dylan, and Nussbaum and Nitti standing up on stage, top three angler of the year coming into the tournament. And there was some confusion with NWT. I don't know if you watched it, but they asked me to get off the stage because they said there's a tie. And all of us in the point standing, all of us on the circuit knew the tie was between me and Hunter. But the NWT had some confusion, and the tie was actually between, you know, they kept Hunter and Dylan up there. So then everybody knew who won that. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like anything suspenseful, and they were trying to be suspenseful. But then once they told me to get off the stage, they're like, okay, Hunter won the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And so there was some discombobulation there. It's a big word for me.
Yeah.
But there was, you know.
What was the tiebreaker, though?
Well, right away, they're like, oh, it was because Hunter caught one more fish in the season. But that ended up not being the actual tiebreaker.
Come on, guys. Get it together.
The tiebreaker was the most weight caught.
Over the course of the season. Yeah.
So yeah. And I didn't even realize this until days later, but, I only had less than 2 pounds less than Hunter.
For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors podcast put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoors podcast put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their Eye Candy Kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy Kit. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at RizaviTaxidermyStudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast.
I do want to dig into a couple of these elements because, you know, the abbreviated prefish does, you know, it is a component of the championship, and it you know, can change things for some people, you know, good or bad. You know, I'm also curious about the comment, you know, with that Thunder Bay area, like what is it, how is that explained to you, like why that area is so historically, you know, this time of year the big fish area, like is that like super well-known information for all the locals? Is that where all the tournaments are won? Like I'm just sort of curious, you know, like how that information was coming to you, like what is it about that system that makes that Thunder Bay area kind of the go-to area.
Yeah, and it is from just research from previous local tournaments out there, and just the knowledge that, like, the guys I run with, for example, they just know historically, like, you know, where these tournaments are won, the stretches that they're won, and that just happens to be that area. And I just think it just all has to do with that particular bait and walleye migration. And that's just typically the time of year where most of the higher percentage of those bigger fish are. So I think that's...
Because that's where that's where the smelt want to be.
Yep, and there's really deep water real close there. Like, it goes down into hundreds of feet. And they're just, you know, that smelt is just cruising through all the, you know, they, just like in Green Bay, where the alewives, you know, they go in the spring, they're go down to the south part of Green Bay. And as the water temps start to warm up, you know, they don't like that warm water. They start to die off, and then they start moving back north again. And this is just from what I've learned in the last couple of years, but like, so then they start following that cooler water, and then the walleyes go with them. And so same deal on Huron, Thunder Bay, Alpena area. And then, but then those walleyes also, like, they don't like that cold water. If there's warm water close by, they're just going to be in that. And we could literally see the water fluctuations within like a literally an eighth of a mile to quarter mile stretch in your boat idling. Like, you could see it change like 6 to 8 degrees. It's crazy,
man.
And it's like, yeah, and that just pockets of warm water. And when I say pockets, I'm talking about giant areas, you know. But so that's the main reason there, I think, that, you know, a lot of people are focused around that area. A big portion of the field was around, at least, you know, I'd say Thunder Bay area to about 8 miles south of that is a big congregation of where most of us were fishing, except for me and the few of the other leaders going into day three were fishing south as well. But I believe, unless I just didn't see somebody, I think I was fishing, pretty sure I was fishing like 10 to 12 miles farther south than the next person. But down there, again, the water temp was just more stable all week long. It never really moved. It stayed at that 69 degree water temp pretty much all week long. And there was some color to the water. So you really didn't have to, you could get close, which I like, for pinpoint cast. Like, there's a lot of times you, in that real clear water, you have to get a bait out 80 feet, and that's fine. But you have, even though those fish can see it farther away, you have to position that bait where those fish want it. It's weird. Like, you could toss a bait out 80 feet, and if it's behind it and it has to turn around to look at it, they might not want it that way that day. That's mm-hmm. what's weird about fishing like this and being able to see and learn their reactions. There's days they want it way out in front of them so they can chase it down in front of them. There's times they want it creeped up behind them and brought right over their backs, right between their eyes, and they just grab it. You know, so you just have to, it's like a day-to-day thing with these walleyes, figure out how they want it. So that's why I like to get close so that I can get that bait exactly in the position where that fish is more likely to eat it that day. But
yeah, it's like they have forward sonar. They're trolling around with their forward sonar, and they're being picky at what they're going to go try to eat. You know,
yep,
it's like, and you're being picky at what you want to cast at.
Yep.
They're trolling around with their sonar, and it's like, they're skipping fish too. If it's not just the way they
like
it.
That's it. Yep. Same deal.
You know, I'm curious about that water temperature deal when your observation, like, is that just completely altogether moving fish, or are you going back into these areas? You know, you say, you know, you teamed up with Chase, you're sharing information, and Chase got onto something one day and had a great day, probably was super optimistic going into the next day, and goes back there, water temperature plummets, you know, and the bite is gone, or the bite is different. That being the example, like I'm sure, you know, everybody was talking about that to some extent. Like, was that completely mm-hmm. moving fish? Were those fish just completely gone? Or was that cold water just sort of putting those fish in a funk to where, you know, they wouldn't bite?
No, we weren't seeing them at all. It was like the Dead Sea when the water, they were okay. There's either two things. They were either gone, which I think they were just gone, or they were belly tight to the bottom, which I don't think so. I think in that case, if they're tight to the bottom, I would still, I picked those areas apart slowly, looking and trying to see if I could see anything coming off the bottom at all, and there was nothing. So I think they just follow that warm water. Like when he caught them there, the water was warm. And then, you know, as that water is getting pushed around out there, I think they're just obviously they're swimming with it. They're literally gone. So he had me go check it. And cause he, you know, it was like, you know, and
you work
so
off
I,
each other like that. Yep.
Yep. And I went, I like, there was nothing there, like zero. But when I got up there too, you know, I right away, I called him. Right when I got there, I'm like, water temp's like 57, just barely hitting 58. And it was in like 67, 68 the day before. So I was like, he wasn't impressed when I called him, told him that. But then I started panicking, just looking around. I didn't mark a single fish in the entire area. It was a big area. Nothing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you kind of already made that comment that, you know, and I can sort of envision how that went for you when you were just in practice and you were observing, you know, days of practice were racking up and you were observing those fish that were out suspended over that deep water that were moving south. And you're starting to, like, you know, before the tournament, you're thinking about that. Mm-hmm. You sort of theorize, you know, you sort of just, like, you know, wished it into existence. And, you know, whether we're 100% correct in interpreting what you did or not, but it seems like that, you know, that's what happened. I mean, you anticipated the fish, the bigger fish, heading south, and you were there to catch them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was that the big, you know, looking back on this tournament, was that the big idea? Like, was that the big swing that you knocked out of the park in all of this? Or, you know, just if you were to sort of try to figure out, you know, maybe the one or the most key component to the fishing, you know, as to how you won, like the decision that you made
mm-hmm.
that made you win the tournament, what would you say it was?
I think it was the strategy in, like I told a few people that I talked to before the tournament started, I said, I'm going to fish the tortoise strategy.
Fish the consistent bite.
Yep, the slow and steady. I said, I'm going to go where I know their fish are, and I know I can get 16 to 18 pounds. And at the time, I thought, you know, again, that was on the low end of what everybody was talking about, but that was what I was seeing in practice. So I was like, well, I'm going to go fish the slow and steady game and hopefully make day three. And so then I had it kind of out of my mind on day one and start of day two that what I was noticing, those fish swimming south, I had it out of my mind. Like, I was like, that's a fairy tale. You know, that's just like a deal. Like, they're moving a mile to 2 miles an hour. They got 80 miles to go or out to where I was going to fish the tournament. That puts it exactly during tournament days that they're going to be down there. I'm like, that doesn't happen. I'm like, I just like, that doesn't happen like that. It's just a fairy tale. So that was out of my mind. So the people say, you know, do you swing for the fence in this? And in the beginning, before the tournament started, when pre-fishing started, yes, I was thinking, yes, I'm going to swing for the fence. There's no reason to be conservative. But then from what I saw in pre-fish, I almost couldn't say that was swinging for the fence because I was only shooting for 16 to 18 pounds. But then looking at it now, fishing like that was dangerous. Like, knowing that the other people were going to fish where the bigger fish are. Now, when I did fish north, the fish I caught up there were on average size better. There was fewer fish up there but the average size was better than down south, but it was the same exact weight, if that makes sense, as I was catching down south. So by fishing down there, it was safe because in my mind, I knew I could get that weight. But then I think because I was playing it safe like that and used that strategy, it kind of was swinging for the fence because it was risky. Like, do I do this? And I didn't, it was bothering me that night before. I'm like, do I go north and catch? I think I can catch in one day, I can catch 16 to 18 pounds there. But what if the water temp shifts? You know, I kept thinking that, like, what if it shifts and I have to chase new water? So out of the chute, I went right. And so it could go both ways. Like, yes, I played it safe, knowing for my own sake I could go catch that, but it was a risky way if a person's trying to win the tournament. So I guess I did swing in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I hear exactly what you're saying there, because it's like, you know, the strategy is like pretty much with a tournament field like the NWT in a regular season event, but especially the championship, everybody goes everywhere and just says, well, somebody's going to catch them. You know, every day you go out, you know, and ahead of the tournament, you know, every team or just about every angler probably witnessed, you know, or had enough catches to think that, you know, a 25 to 30 pound bag was possible. Maybe not every single day, maybe not the average, but maybe, you know, like you're thinking, whoever wins this is going to have a 25 pound average, and I can't wait to find out how they did it because I'm not seeing it. So everybody's got that in the back of their mind, but you know, it took a small ball mentality, but it's risky because you probably, you know, you weren't feeling like the even the off chance. Like you said, after that first day, you never saw one that looked like a 10 pounder or an 8 pounder. Nope. Like there wasn't even an off chance for a kicker fish. And that's what makes it wildly risky, is because you don't even have, you know, you're not even seeing any sign of a remote chance that you could, you know, even have a bag like that. So, you know, you're literally, you just put all your eggs in that basket. So yeah, that probably felt really risky. Like, oh man, am I doing the right thing? Or am I going to come in the middle of the pack and, you know, maybe barely scratch a check together. But man, your pieces were getting put together through pre-fish and through the tournament. And that's, dude, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. I think that stuff is, you know, I mean, it's just special, dude. And this is your first win on the NWT, correct?
Yeah, I've been very, very close. And this just came out of nowhere on day three to make it happen. It's like, I didn't even see it coming.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about how you won it, when you think about, you look back on the whole experience and you won this tournament. Like, how do you sum that up from like a perspective? Like, how do you sum up like what it might mean to you? Or maybe it's nothing. Maybe it was just another tournament to you. And that's cool too. But like, how would you sum that up?
Well, it's just crazy. Like looking at it now, like going into it, just for the fact that in the last few years I've been able to compete and hold my own against, you know, like a lot of the names that's been around for a while, the legends of the sport, the future legends of the sport. And then now the guys who are coming up behind me, like learning these electronics, you know, and being able, you know, to compete. And, you know, I wish I had all the time in the world to be on the water, like to learn more and more and more about these electronics. And I don't have near as much time on the water as a lot of these people, but the difference is like, I will follow a fish. I'll watch how a fish reacts. I'll record that fish. As in like my university I'm launching, like I'll record it, I'll watch it, I'll study it, I'll figure out what they want, why they want it. And to be able to do that is how I'm able to compete against the best in the world. And to walk away with that trophy, especially, you know, just not thinking it was going to happen. Like, I've been so close so many times, and it was amazing. Like, it was crazy. And to be tied for Angler of the Year points wise, that too. Yes, I didn't come away with that, but just to be up there with all these guys, it means the world. And the response I get from the from my fellow competitors, my friends out there, like, it's awesome to see that it's a good, friendly competition. Everybody wants to learn something, including myself. And to be where I'm at in a few short years in the walleye industry, like, there's no words. Like, like I said, standing in the boat day three, just thinking that I may have just done this. Yeah. Like, I couldn't hold it together. Like, you know, I like tearing up out there and everything. Like, I'm like that anyway. Like, I get like up on stage. Like, I told the tournament director right away, like, he asked me something and I went off on a total different a topic, because, and at the end of what I was talking about, I'm like, you can't ask me any more questions. I'm not going to be able to stand up here. I'm not going to be able to hold it together. That's why I went off on that tangent on Garmin LiveScope. So, let's just, you know, let's move on. Because I don't know. I'm like, I get emotional about that kind of thing, but just to be the fact that I worked in a few short years, I worked really hard in the limited time that I have with my businesses at home and everything, to get to where I am and to have gotten gain the trust of my fellow competitors and my, you know, the people who follow along wanting to learn. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. Like, winning a tournament, yes, it's awesome. It's given me a platform, but a platform to teach and teach people what I'm doing. And so, yeah, it's awesome. And I did it. I have that championship. It's mine.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, a lot of people are happy for you, for sure, man. Everybody likes you, Tom. There's no question about it, dude. Because I think it's integrity. And I think you're just a fun dude. I think that's true. I think there's something to be said for, I can't imagine anybody not wanting to, you know, hang out with you and be around you. You're just that kind of guy. But then you compete just with hard knuckles out there on the water, and it's like, you know, and so well deserved, man. You finally came around and hoisted a big trophy. I don't even know if that really, it probably ultimately doesn't change much. Everybody knew you were a winner, but it is really, really cool. And, you know, yeah, a great season for Hunter and Dylan and, you know, everybody on the list these days is just, it's so awesome. Everybody's just an absolute stick. And yeah, man. And, you know, I love getting the story on the championship, no doubt about it. And I'll probably pick your brain down the road with some of that stuff, because I think there's some major nuances to not just the tournament strategy, but like the fishing, when you talk about all those moving parts of like watercolor and temperature and stuff like that. I just love the way your brain thinks on that stuff. But I do want to get into, because of the timing of it all, we got to talk about this Tom Wynn University. I get a billion questions, like, when are you going to have Tom Wynn on and talk about Tom Wynn University? People are asking me detailed questions, like, as if I would know. Like, what's he going to do with this? When's he going to do that? How do I get a hold of this? Or, you know, like, what are we, you know, what to expect? You know, it's like, oh, man. So let's do it. I don't care how much time we spend on it. We can go another hour or whatever, but I just want to give you the floor and transition into this Tom Wynn University. kind of on the wings of a champion NWT championship win here in 2024. So what a, you know, opportunity to promote, because everybody wants to hear about the championship and they ought to be listening about the Tomwin University deal. So let's spend some time here in this one and address that. You've kind of already done some soft launching. You've done some marketing. Some stuff is out there. People are buzzing about it. What do we need to know about it right now? What are some of the details? What can we cover?
Well, it's basically the original idea came about with, it's like a husband wife that, you know, I met fishing buddies of mine that just met them and a couple years ago, and they were all about learning forward facing sonar. And, you know, that was in the midst of me and Nate, you know, having a really good aim run and me, you know, getting second place in the championship on the NWT. And so it was and the fact that, you know, when people would ask me something, I think, like, I was just, you know, being a new angler, I was trying to get all the information I could early on, like, how can I be better or what to look for. And a lot of anglers, you know, whether it's a boat launch, I'm not talking competitors so much, I'm just, it could have been anybody, some random at the boat launch, or it could have been a competitor, and a lot of people would just kind of, they wouldn't give me any information to help me out, you know. So then as I started, you know, doing well, figuring out these electronics and stuff, like when people asked me stuff, I would just tell them, because, and like, I think people were caught off guard by that. And I think because of that, a lot of people didn't know if I was telling the truth or not. Like, really?
Yeah.
You know? And so for me, starting this fishing journey in my 40s, like, I have lived enough life now to know that in order to grow, whether it's yourself or, an aspect of an industry like the walleye fishing industry, if your goal is to grow as a person or with an industry, you have to be transparent. You have to just teach people and help them grow. And just like the Bassmaster, look at bass. The bass industry is giant compared to walleye industry. And the main reason for that is, I believe, is because years and years ago now, Bassmaster elites, and now in the opens, you have live cameras in the boats during tournaments, live. So there's no more hiding anything. What those guys are using and catching fish with, we know exactly the cadence now. We know what to go to the store to buy, what color. We know everything about it. So then the bass industry is flourishing. Whereas in the walleye world, it's been so, so secretive. And
right.
So it's just, so that is what I've put together in my few short years of doing this. I could be wrong, but that's my takeaway from why the industry has been stagnant for so many years. And then it really hit me last year, 1 year ago now, Devil's Lake Championship. I stayed after day two. I finished 11th place. I didn't make the cut. I stayed around just talking to the guys, say, you know, see you guys next year, whatever. One of the other last people to leave was Gary Parsons. And I was about to get in my truck and he hollered at me. He's like, Tom, I need to, he goes, I want to talk to you. So I went and talked to Gary for a little bit. And that was my first actual conversation with him, other than just saying hi, you know, in passing. Sure. Or whatever. And one of the things that stuck with me is the fact that, you know, he said, you know, he's been doing this for over 40 years. And in 40 years, he's not seen really anybody come in and completely shift the trajectory of walleye fishing, other than, you know, when Corey Springle came in. Mm-hmm. And then he said, now with me coming in with dialing in live scope and the chills, like, honestly, I, you know, talking about getting emotional earlier, like, yeah. When he said that, and coming from him, and he also said, he's like, and you're teaching people. He goes, from just in the clips that you put on Facebook he said, the amount of views that you get, and he goes, I can tell you're not being phony. He goes, when you're telling people things, he goes, you're telling them the truth. And so that coming from him was like, okay, I have to get this university going. And we'd already been talking about it. Like, me and, you know, my partner's with it. I have, you know, like I said, this husband, wife team, she is doing most of it. as far as like the programming, you know, the platform, I'm getting all the content, doing all the video editing, all of that stuff. And she's plugging everything in. But we had this idea, and but it's not like I can just go on the water and be like, I'm going to go record a sucker and a walleye today and show people the examples. It's not like I can just jump in the boat and be like, yeah, I'm going to do that.
The walleyes don't read the script and all that. And the weather doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a lot of time doing that to get all this content, but literally showing people exactly what I'm seeing when I'm fishing tournaments, when I'm just fun fishing, when I'm doing any, just when I'm on the water. And it's, you know, it's going to help so many people learn their electronics now so they can get their kids out. And having, working with these people, it's helping me to, because there's a lot of stuff I learned in the beginning that I've forgotten about, you know, but it's just a simple basic stuff. But this university covers all of that. Like all of the stuff from the beginning, when you turn that thing on for the first time, to when you're getting more advanced in it, it's showing, I have hundreds of like over probably 130, 140 just screen recordings, high definition screen recording. I'm not talking about taking a camera or my phone and recording my screen. I'm talking about internal screen recordings,
yeah,
in high definition. And, you know, you go on YouTube, for example, and you see screen recordings of forward-facing sonar, but they're either silent with a caption at the bottom or there's a voiceover. This is a screen recording, and I inset myself in there looking at the student, if you will, and I'm explaining word for word in real time what they're seeing on their screen, why they're seeing it on their screen. And it's full of information, and people are like, are you sure you want to do this, show everybody what you're doing? And I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, but it, at the same time, it's going to push me harder to want to learn more. Like it's going to, I still want to stay that step ahead, but even when I'm doing that, I'm still going to be sharing what I'm learning at all times, you know, like that's what it's all about. And if we can help grow the industry where more and more of us are on the same page, I'm not talking competitively, I'm talking just fishing in general with forward-facing sonar. Just think what the technology could be. Not even that. Just think how many more people are going to be on the waters. And the funny thing is, with forward-facing sonar, the people who are good at it, we're actually keeping less fish.
Yeah, I think that conservation element is right there. You know, just the big picture of just being educated anglers. I had this conversation, or I've had it a few times, with some longtime guys, and like, you know, forward sonar or not, but just, you know, when you look at the modern day angler, walleye angler nowadays in the Midwest, you know, so many people are so much more dialed in, you know, mm-hmm. to whatever it is that they're doing. People are just super dialed into what they're doing. And, you know, talking about the integrity and the authenticity, like people can see through the BS nowadays just because, yeah, like the average guy is better. That's the trend. And a more educated angler is always going to be, you know, big picture as a whole, generally speaking, more educated anglers are going to be better conservationists because we're learning about these fish, and you're sort of like, yeah, you're just sort of like building a better relationship with them and a better understanding. And yeah, like talking about, you're just naturally going to handle them better If you're catching more fish, you're going to get better at handling them. If you catch more big fish, you're going to get better at handling them. You know,
yes, and it's awesome you bring that up because about handling them. Because one thing I get a lot is, you know, we like for Lake of the Woods or where I just came from, people are like, you get the haters, if you will, on social media, like, oh, you're catching those fish out of 30 some feet of water, you're killing all those fish. Here's the funny thing about that, and I don't argue on social media. It is what it is. It's all about education, and they will see in Tom Winn University what I'm talking about. But for example, you catch a fish out of 32 feet of water at Lake of the Woods, a 10 pounder, right? So people are like, "Oh, you're gonna that fish is gonna die. It's dead."
Like barrel trout or whatever.
Yeah. So number one, like whenever I hook into a fish now, the reason we were reeling fish in so fast before and is because we wanted to see what it was. We were like, what is this? You know, it's huge. I want to get lay my eyes on it, you know, before it comes off. I want to at least see it. So we're reeling it up really fast. Now I already know I've already seen that fish before I cast it at it. I know what it is. So I'm reeling it up slow. Number one, number two, we're catching more and more big fish now that we're not spending 10 minutes taking pictures of it. We got it in the boat. We take the hook off. We're putting it back. But the most important thing that Nate and I did in AIM tournaments and what I do now when I'm just out fishing is forward-facing sonar is teaching us so much about how we're actually not killing these fish. Because when I put a fish back, a big one like that, over deep water, I'll follow that fish with my forward-facing sonar until I can see that it's stable underneath the water, not floating up. And this year on the Lake of the Woods, not one single fish, not one, came up. And I fished up there 3 days, got a lot of content, and a lot of people have seen the videos and stuff when I was up there, but not one fish came to the surface. They were swimming healthily back down in the water level that we caught them from because we're putting them back quick enough. They readjust. And there's times when I have to, with forward-facing sonar, I spend 5 to 10 minutes watching them because they kind of stall for a little bit because they're tired.
Yeah, they just got caught. But, yeah.
Yeah, but not one fish rose back up to the top. So, I mean, so people can like, oh, forward-facing sonar is killing them. But forward-facing sonar is also ensuring that those fish are fine. So, either way.
There's obviously so many arguments, you know, more and more so in the bass world, tournament world, you know, that nucleus, like there's so much more drama there around the, you know, oh, it's just, it's putting so much pressure on fish. It's bad, going to be bad for the fisheries or whatever. Well, that all that stuff is yet to be seen, and we'll move and groove and adjust to whatever is going on when something is going on. That's just how it always is. I can't wait for this time when university, I'm just so excited for it. Personally, because I can't wait to just learn, get better, you know, hear the ideas, see that real-time footage.
And there's no fishing education platform even remotely close to this. There's not. The layout, and since it's curriculum-based, it's like laid out in a way where people have the best chance of learning it and keeping it in their brain. Literally, it's not just a mess of videos. No knocking on YouTube at all, but it's not just like you're searching for a certain thing. It's a big mess of videos, and you watch a 20-minute video and you find 10 seconds of stuff. They're like, oh yeah, this is great. But then a week later, you get in your boat and they're like, oh yes, what did they say again? But then you have to remember which video you saw, where it was that video. And then, but this is like laid out, like literally like continuing education in universities. It's laid out where when you see it, when you watch these things, there's knowledge checks in these. At the end of each module, there's like knowledge checks to like little quizzes, you know, to like help. And all of these things, just the way it's laid out, is at first when we had the idea, I'm thinking, gosh, this is like too much. But then when I saw it, when I see it laid out now for the first time, when I saw it actually all laid out, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is going to help so many people. And it's like so easy to navigate, extremely easy to navigate. Everything's just right there. You can, it's a web-based, it's on fishthu.com. So it's easy because you can watch it at home on your computer screen, or if you forget, for example, what settings I said to use on there in your boat, pull it up on your phone. It's right there. It's everything's right there. I teach people how to do their own screen recordings so that they can, if they see some fish, then they can't get the bite. They can do their own screen recordings, go back home, look what they recorded on their phone, put it up next to my screen recordings that I'm providing for them through the university, and be like, okay, there we go. There's what these fish are. That's why they're not biting, you know? So it's just, it's crazy. I'm excited. I'm super excited about it. It launches on the 19th.
Okay.
Which you come up here in a few days, but from this recording anyway. But
yeah, I'm going to try to get this out right around that time. Yep.
So it's $279 for the course. And that's like a, you know, you can almost, people say it's an annual subscription. You could look at it that way. Or each year I'm coming out with a new course, and each course is going to be chock full of all this information. So even if somebody doesn't get forward facing sonar till next year, they can still buy this original course, if that makes sense. So okay. it's always going to be there. So the course is $279 and it has tons of hours, way more hours of videos and, content than what you could get with me in a day's worth of fishing. And, through this couple years, I've tried to prove, and I have basically proven, that I can teach this extremely effectively and the person doesn't have to have a rod in their hand. And so that's what makes this even more special, because I have taken people fishing. We've done some TV shows where people have looked at this, some of this university, or I've taken them out in the boat, showed them electronics, show them what I'm looking at for the first half of the day. And then I just let them go. You know, let them, here you go.
Yep.
Take the trolling motor, go fishing. And it's just crazy how we've formatted this so that people can learn without actually being on the water. And it's,
yeah,
I'm excited.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, with content consumption nowadays, you know, the learning curve is a lot steeper, I think, just because people have, you know, the gear is better. You know, people, like I say, people are dialed in. But I think you're spot on with, it's really difficult for like the television format to really, really well teach people technical information.
Yes.
You know, while they're sitting on their couch. Okay. You know, mm-hmm. TV is phenomenal for showcasing opportunities to fish, mm-hmm. like destinations and time of the year, and, you know, and the presentations and technical information that sort of goes into that. But in the end, people aren't going to be validated, you know, with any of that. They're probably not particularly gain confidence in any of that until they go out and do it a bunch, and all those things. I think like, you know, even like this podcast, I think has done pretty well for people to some extent, where we're able to more long form, where we can, mm-hmm. we just have the, and it's really just the time, and we reach details that, you know, again, things like YouTube videos or whatever that are, you know, 20 minutes long, you know, you just reach a level of detail that you're never going to get anywhere. But with something like yours, you're not doing it to be entertaining to people. You don't have to be flashy or viral. Yep. Like, this is people that have their full intention and their, and you know, when somebody gets to the point where they've paid for your course, they're just there for the real deal. And, and that's a total mentality there. Like, you're getting the right people and you're fitting them with the right information and you're reaching it into a level that's on their level. And, you know, you talk about it being like course, you know, where you sort of have to, like, you work your way up so they, you know, they can find that sweet spot where they're on their level, and then they're going to find out which information is going to help them level up. Mm-hmm. And yeah, dude, like I'm stoked for that. It definitely sounds like it's going to be something totally different and totally awesome. And yeah, dude, I'm excited. So, okay, you kind of already mentioned it, but what is the full breakdown of where people can find it and what people can, what people are going to see on the 19th?
So on the 19th, it's going live on Fish, www.fishthu.com. And you just go in there, register. You can get a little sneak of it, peek of it, you know, even before registration, just see what how it's laid out and everything like that. But just keeping it simple. You know, there's a lot of app-based stuff out right now. There's a lot of video-based stuff out, like you said, like a lot of shows. You know, you get a 24-minute show. They need at least 8 fish catches, and you have YouTube videos where it's just nonstop fish catches. This, I think, I have just a handful of fish catches on there because it's like, what for? I mean, it's all education. It's
I mean, if catching fish is that easy, then you know anybody can do it. It's like it's almost like if you dig into the portion of a day of fishing or the details and the technical information that revolve around catching a fish that doesn't want to bite. I mean, mm-hmm. Now yeah. We're talking.
I mean, I could have casted it. Most of these fish that people are going to see on my electronics here, I could have casted every single one of them with an actual hook. And a lot of them, I casted at them with a cutoff hook. Most of them I did just so people could see these fish's reactions. Like, so, I mean, there's so much content, just fish behavior, different species, and, it's just actually an overwhelming amount of valuable content. Like, and it's, you know, it's not just you click on a video and it's, you don't know what's coming up. Before you click on that video, you know exactly what you're about to see. Like, so that's a nice thing too. And there are 100, I think over 170 video.
Oh man, clips. Right out the gate, huh?
Right out the gate, right away. The people who sign up for it get 170 right away, and that's the full course. I mean, it's it's crazy, actually, how much information is going to be in this thing. And but it's what I've been telling people for. Trying to teach people for the last 2 or 3 years, and now they can put their eyeballs on it. You know, not yep. Everybody wants to, there's so many people want to jump in the boat with me. And honestly, this is way more valuable than jumping in the boat with me for a day.
You can go back and watch it again and again and again. It comes with you. It's like, you're in my boat. I'm not in your boat.
And you own the content. Like once you sign up and everything, you own that content. It's yours. Even when the next course comes out next year, this original course is still yours.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So you have that at your fingertips. Whereas if you jump in the boat with me for a day, it can be overwhelming. And then you get out of the boat. I'm guilty of it too. Like, okay, I get out of the boat. And like for in the winter, I get out of the boat. In the spring, I jump back in the boat and I'm like, okay, what's a walleye look like again? Really? Like I have to retrain my eyes. And that phrase, retrain your eyes, I use it a lot throughout this curriculum because it's like, that's what it is. It's keeping your brain fresh so that you're continuing to learn. You're going to push your own boundaries, which is going to push my boundaries because I'm going to be learning from all of you who sign up for this. And, the limit, who knows where the limit is. Even if the technology doesn't change and it stays where it is, this is going to be good for the industry, good for the people who want to jump in these small derbies. There's going to be more money for people to, you know, for these industries to spread around so these young anglers can get sponsorships, you know, that work for it. So, you know, it's just going to help, you know, the whole entire industry. And I'm just can't believe after 3 or 4 years of doing this that
here we are.
We're shaking things up already. You know what I mean?
You're the man, Tom. Yeah, well, dude, that's awesome. Yeah. It's like, you know, yeah, I think the walleye industry, you know, a lot of industries like, Yeah, man. Like, everybody has that common thread. We're all different, maybe personalities. We're all different, maybe what we want to get out of a day of fishing or whatever. But fishing, at the core of it, we're all connected through fishing, whether we're tournament anglers or guides or just family men that fish recreationally, whatever.
Yes. And the biggest thing is the families. It's the families. It's the that dynamic that I think is going to benefit the most is like getting those families out there. Like growing up, I didn't have that opportunity. And so getting these kids that have so much information at their fingertips right now that they could care less about the outdoors. They're not as prone to be outside. They're on their screens, which now I'm trying to teach them to be on a different kind of screen. But like to get those families out there, to get people involved, to teach their kids, to teach their grandkids responsibility, you know, and that's the biggest thing is the this is mainly geared towards them. Of course, there's going to be tournament anglers who are going to see something in these things that are going to be like, oh, shoot, you know, I didn't know that before. But this is just to help all those people, even the people who are against it, the people who are against forward-facing sonar have forward-facing sonar. But yeah, it's going to help a lot of these people like understand it. And that's the goal here, just so they understand it. And then using it responsibly.
Yep. And having more fun with it. Mm-hmm. Just go out and have fun fishing.
That's it.
Oh, dang. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I think that's a phenomenal investment. You know, I mean, we all have so much invested into our stuff. You don't even have to have the latest and greatest to have a lot, you know, invested in your stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is like investing into your future. Yeah, like this is cool, man. So, yeah, I'm glad we're able to touch on that. And,
Thank you.
We would have probably done this podcast even if you got last place at the championship, but it's pretty cool that you won it.
It is so crazy, the timing, how this season worked out. It's just amazing. You know, I'm so thankful for, you know, everybody out there listening to this, like all those people who come to you for questions for me.
Yeah, they do. Seriously, I love it. I think it's hilarious. Some of them are like my close buddies and they're like, hey, man. Yeah, man. Like, I don't know. They probably just feel weird in some kind of way sending you a DM or whatever. Or they were, you know, everybody's just sitting and waiting, holding on to their seat.
And listen, like, oh, for those guys, don't be weird about that. Like, and don't be, you know, if you're a tournament angler, don't hesitate to ask me anything ever. It's never, never need to be embarrassed. Never need, like, I was there not that long ago, and I was, you know, looking for information, just trying to help myself, like, you know, learn more and stuff like that. So, I mean, I don't want anybody to feel that if they sign up for this, I'm going to call them out and be like, oh, thanks so-and-so for signing up. You know, like everything is confidential that way. And, you know, it is what it is. Everybody needs to learn this. And
yeah,
I'm just glad that everybody trusts me to want to teach it.
Yeah. You know, one last little thing that popped into my head is, you know, back at the more original, you know, sort of point, sort of nucleus of, you know, this origin story of this is like you were observing just how terrible anglers can be at sharing information.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that's true, that that's definitely been since the beginning of time. And I think it's probably still the vast majority of personalities out there are just, it's what we learned from, you know, our dads or our mentors, is that, you know, you can maybe share a little bit of information, but never share it all. Never share your spots, you know, whatever. We all think we have so much figured out that it's so valuable that we got to keep it a secret. But I think that it would be so cool if we were to continue to see a shift where anglers were to be more communal and people would share information. And it's not just like, you know, trying to butcher a school of fish and tell somebody a waypoint, you know, but teaching people how to fish and some of the details that mattered for you that day, you know, it's like you got to realize it isn't that you just knew everything about that spot. You know, how fast were you going? What was the water temp? You know, what was your cadence? You know, what size bait were you using? Getting, you know, like figuring out those patterns in life and then being good at sharing that kind of information so somebody can go out and find their own fish.
Yep.
But be better, you know, like I would love to see more of a shift, you know, just like you. It's like I've had all those, like that's just how I was brought up. I've had to learn how to get better at communicating that information too. But yeah, I super value that. And it's also funny, you know, think about how many people that, you know, think they're going to take all this tremendous fishing knowledge to the grave, but Forward Sonar is just like butchering everything that people have been trying to keep a secret forever. Mm-hmm. It's like, in reality, you've been kind of weird about stuff, sharing information with other people, and now we're finding out that you're probably wrong about it. So
yeah, you're wrong about it anyway.
You need to humble yourself. I think you need to humble yourself because people just think they got too much figured out, or they want to represent that they have something figured out. When mm-hmm. a stranger at the boat ramp asks them something, and you're being all facetious, you know, it's like, you know, again, I've been there, but I was probably just too scared to share information because I didn't think I had anything figured out, but you know, it's like, I don't even want to send this guy down the wrong path. But, but that being said though, I think that there's something huge there that people are going to learn fishing with your content. If they invest in that, they're investing in their journey as anglers to getting better. But also I think as a community, anglers are going to adopt this more, just a more gathering, a more togetherness and communicating, getting better at communicating responsibly, mm-hmm. And effectively. And we're all just, you know, yeah, like we all got, I don't know how to say it better, but we all got to hold hands to some extent. We all got to hold hands a little bit, to some extent. And when we do that, we have tremendous power, you know, again, mm-hmm. and it goes all the way to the conservation side of things that you've already talked about, that this has nothing to do with putting too much pressure on fish that didn't have pressure on them before. I mean, this is the total package. This is going to teach people how to be better at fishing, more knowledgeable. We're going to learn more about fish behavior and all those things. And when that starts happening, we naturally just become better at handling them. We become more familiar with the fish. The fish get, you know, the fish are happier about it all. And we care about the fish. We care about the resources. And when things happen in nature and the fisheries fluctuate this way or that way, and it's your home body of water, it's like, we'll know what to do. We'll know how to handle these situations. We'll know how to be good conservationists, and we'll be good advocates for the walleyes. And or whatever fish you chase, because you don't even have probably walleye centric, you know, your university. But I can only imagine. I mean, does it even have to be said that regardless of what fish you fish for, that there's probably 90% of this information you could take to the bank and utilize it to be better at catching anything.
Oh, 100%. It's mostly walleyes this course, but I have a lot of bass stuff in here too. And I have, and it's not just species. Electronics. It doesn't matter. Even if it's if you have Garmin, Lowrance, or Humminbird, you're going to benefit from this. I made sure of that. And I didn't use any sponsors for this project. Like zero. I was reached out by two decent sized companies that wanted to get on the back end of it, and I, you know, was humbled by it, but I refused. I have zero sponsors behind this THU project at all, so that there is no, you know, leaning towards one electronics brand or the other. It's just basically all, like, I'm not trying to sell anything, but with a brand of electronics that I use, if I can show somebody that's using something else that, hey, maybe they aren't seeing everything, hey, I've helped somebody. You know what I mean? So I did that for a reason. No sponsors for this THU for the first couple of years here, and I'm just keeping it neutral so that, you know, of course it'd be nice to have the money, but at the same time, I want to show people that it's not all about that. Like, it's just about the education first and foremost. So
awesome, man. I appreciate that a ton. Well, let's sign this off, man. We've covered a whole bunch of good stuff, and hopefully people are still, you know, listening all the way to the end. They ought to be. That being said, just like I always sign these things off, man, where can people find you if they have questions? comments or just want to follow along. I imagine 99% of the people listening to this are very familiar with you, but for that last 1%, you know, we've promoted Fish THU, but what are your socials? What are some other content? Anything like that that you just want to throw out there?
Yes, my social media, Facebook and Instagram, are both Tom Wynn Fishing. And, of course, now Tom Wynn University is on fishthu.com.
There it is, man.